pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello and welcome to Declarations of War, episode 180, closing in on that sweet, sweet number 200. I am your host, Alexei of Card, joined by my co-hosts, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
Ben Levitain.
And good evening, everyone, and good morning.
And good night.
If I don't see you, good evening, good afternoon, and good night. That's such a great movie. If you haven't seen it, do watch The Truman Show.
Is that what that's from?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen The Truman Show, like, multiple times, and I don't remember that quote.
What?
It's like his catchphrase. But he doesn't realize it's a catchphrase, because he doesn't know that he's in the show. No?
Yeah, I don't... Like, I can...
Or you're making me doubt my sanity now. Am I wrong?
The story of the movie... You're probably right. My memory's just freaking broken. Let's talk about Eve.
Okay. And there is much Eve to discuss, ladies and gentlemen. I think the biggest, most earth-shattering thing. Changes to Sinosaur Fields. The Chaos Era strikes again. We will all breathe with CCP. Yes, the Chaos Era is now taking Sinos away from just about every ship in the game, except for Recons and Black Ops battleships. You'll no longer be able to fit Sinos onto your carrier, onto your Rorqual. No longer able to fit a covert Sino onto your bomber. Yeah, rookie ships, forget about them.
Whoa. You can still fit Covops cloaks to, or Covops Sinos to bombers, right?
Yes.
But Covops Sinos weren't getting changed.
Whoops.
So, cover ops are not getting changed, it's just the standard Sino, so bye-bye Sino Scepter.
Well, we say cover ops isn't getting changed. It's up in the air still, but in the dev blog it states that jump freighters will be able to jump to cover ops Sinos to make up for the fact that they're losing access to other Sinos. But on CC right now, a recent patch added a thing called a freight Sino. So that may be changing, we don't know. But for the time being, it is the official line from CCP that jump freighters, once these changes hit, will be able to use Covop Sinos.
I'm pretty okay freighters. With that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that seems fine.
I don't really see the advantage of having a separate freight Sino, unless they really want to do something weird with it. And again, maybe they'll do something weird with it.
So let's talk about the response to the proposed changes if they go through, which vastly limit the number of ships that can mount that Sinosaur module.
As you can imagine, the Nullsec Empires are not pleased. I think pretty much the Super Cap Hunters also not pleased. Everyone who roams against these folks, very pleased.
The Super Cap Hunters were the people I wanted to talk to, but never got a chance to. So, Alec, as a member of Wrecking Crew, like, what's the feel?
Honestly, I'm surprised at how little discussion there was. Overall, it seemed neutral to positive, and then it just, like, stopped. I haven't heard it mentioned since the day it was released. I think there's just kind of a, like... Alright, well, we'll just use Recons now. Kind of feeling to it.
Curious.
Yeah, for such a big change, not the direction I expected it to go. What's the word in Horde NPL?
Like, the Crabbers are upset, obviously. The Logistics guys are upset, obviously. I was actually talking, we had Villy on Talking in Stations after the changes were announced, and he seems convinced that these changes just break freaking capital escalation and like large null block fights, because you can't warp recon Sino into an ongoing fight because there are bubbles everywhere, right? So you can't position your Sinos like you otherwise would. And also, they're freaking squishy as crap in the meta of Munin fleets. So you really can't rely on your Sino staying up, and you can't just like Sino in a Sino fax or a Sino super anymore. You just have to have multiple Sino recons. So that's kind of meh, especially because if somebody tries to jump to your Sino as that Sino dies, they just appear at the sun. So it's just like there are, in my opinion, what are legitimate concerns that this change will just break capital escalation in large-scale nullsec fights?
I definitely think it changes it. You know, I think this is also a good view in terms of the decreases to range on Titan and Dreadnought guns. I think you may see carriers become more the flavor because they're less dependent on positioning.
Yeah, that was my take as well. Go ahead, Liv.
Yeah, no, I gotta say, I've heard this argument a few times that this breaks capital escalation insofar that the first people with the cap fleet on grid basically win, and I fully get that the meta right now is Munins and basically a massive alpha strike, and the maximum EHP you can get off a recon is about 160 with a Falcon with a full tank fit, but between that and multiple recons, and the fact that I don't buy too much about the fact that a recon can't get a good warp, get a good position on a grid with bubbles itself. I don't think the effect is going to be quite as major because people are still going to want to use their toys. I'm fully on board with the advantages this change brings because you no longer have an indestructible Sino. You no longer can just Sino an Apostle, and it basically will never die if you don't want it to.
And it's not just recons that are the option. There's the, you know, if you really don't want that signer to die, there is the battleship option. You pop one of those and put some facts on it, it'll probably stay alive.
I kind of disagree here because Black Ops battleships have very, very poor resistances. They only have only just better than T1 resistances. You know, they don't have the same armor resistances you might expect of a heavy assault cruiser. It's also a 1.2 billion ISK ship without any modules on it whatsoever that you're going to need to very heavily tank in order to be your heavy Sino.
That's about what a fax costs. Obviously not as insurable.
Yeah, and not as much EHP, which means a said Munin fleet will quite happily lock it and gobble it up in about a cycle.
Yeah. Well, for the price of that, I mean, you can definitely get over 200k on a...
Yeah. Well, for the price of that, you could probably get about 3 or 4 Falcons decloaking at the same time, all lighting Sinos, and the enemy has a 1 in 4 chance of alphaing the actual Sino.
Well, the issue with the Falcon thing is, like, the Falcon dies, and however many capitals were jumping to it in that tick suddenly appear at the sun.
Aye, but if you get, like, 3 or 4 Falcons and decloak them as a group, all light as a group, the enemy either has to try and alpha all 4 of them at the same time, so they've got less chance of actually scattering your fleet, or the enemy has a 1 in 4 chance of picking the one signer that you're jumping to while you've a free of decoys.
If only there weren't spies on comms and chats to know pretty much exactly which signer.
Well, no, that could easily be done within a super capital, within a super capital wing if you're a super capital fleet. And the one who broadcasts is the signer, if you will. That relies then, because then the spy is going to have to kind of call out on comms, and that should be fairly easy to kind of like pinpoint who they are.
Well, it definitely makes the whole thing more interesting. I wonder if getting that initial early position will be so important that people will start to fight over it more fiercely than currently.
I imagine a situation where now it just makes things more complicated because fighters, their application is mediocre now, especially if you're like shooting at Munins, because the Munins have the whole MWD SIG reduction thingy, and it takes a lot of fighters to volley a Munin, because if you don't volley the Munin, he gets his ADC off, lots of your reps land, you can't break him. but you really need to be able to volley the semis, is what Philly was telling me. So carriers is an initial escalation if you have the numbers, and then I'd imagine those would come in at a ping, which if you get carriers dropped on you, the obvious counterplay is to drop dreads on those carriers and faxes, or to counter drop with your own carriers. Now, if the carriers are dropped at a ping, theoretically, it's easy to get a Sino in at zero on that ping, as opposed to in on top of whatever it was the fight was going on to begin with. So I'd imagine you can still drop dreads at zero on top of carriers plus fax that get escalated first, and then sort of your capital escalation starts 300 kilometers away from where the fight was initially taking place or whatever. The alternative, of course, is just sniper dreads.
Yeah, they could make a comeback.
Comeback.
They never really went anywhere, really.
Yeah. They never left.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember a fight in Great Wildlands a few months ago where we ran into some sniper dreads.
That is right. One of the better fights. Oh, that was a good one.
Sitting here playing with a Widow, and without Lynx you can get up to about 170k EHP. Was your Falcon with Lynx or without Lynx?
I think it was without, to be fair, but I could be wrong.
Man, it's the resist is the issue. I think you hit the nail on the head there. The recons get proper T2 resists, whereas the freaking Bloth battleships do not.
Yeah, so you, for the price of a Bloth, you can send in 3 Falcons. And like I say, you don't shouldn't roll your fleet to them, as like the enemy has a 1 in 3 chance of alphaing the correct Falcon.
No, just think, like, if you're Goon Swarm or Test or Pandemic Legion or whatever, money's not really the object. They'll send 3 Black Ops battleships if they would send 3 Falcons, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they'll quite happily do that. I mean, the thing, obviously, they don't understand is that a Black Ops battleship can only come in as a result of a covert Sino, so it can't just kind of like cruise onto the grid and light its Sino quite happily, because everyone will see it coming and landing. It can't walk while cloaked. So what in the strategy of Black Ops battleships is that you would like light a covert Sino with a ship, say like a bomber, bring in a Black Ops, which then lights a hard Sino for the capitals to come in on. But again, the thing is with recon ships is they just mass decloak. And again, from decloak to Sino up is a tick.
Well, it's definitely dangerous, that's for sure.
Well, it's definitely dangerous. Those recons are probably going to die horribly. But again, if with proper coordination, I don't think this challenge is easily surmountable by any competent, small to moderate plus group.
I should mention this change also probably hurts ratting more than mining. Because like at least in Pandemic Horde, Rorqual mining is very structured. So we always have like a proper Rork FC online managing intel, all that jazz. So that person will just now have to have a Sino recon on grid whenever like Rorks are out. Like that's how it'll be, and because the Rorks are stationary in their belt, it's not that much of an issue. If you're talking like super in carrier ratting, you're going to be impacted I think the most there, but there is a significant portion of carrier and super ratting that is now just I'm planning on not getting tackled is the basic deal. Like we literally have a constellation up in I think it's TKE for Horde that's just like, hey guys, if you want to go carrier super rat out here, it's outside of our range, like we can't save you with the super cap umbrella, but you can like no tank max tick fit and just not get caught, have fun. So I think that'll just be your only two options, because I don't imagine people who are super carrier ratting are going to have their freaking a recon alt follow them around all the time.
I don't know about that one.
If you've got that second alt up, you're better off like using it to make ISK rather than sitting next to your super carrier.
Well, that's a risk reward trade, it seems. Like you could do that, but then you've got two ISK making things which are very vulnerable.
Either way, I'm personally as a very much in favor of reducing the power of the Sino as it is. And I certainly feel that this change, while not being perfect, is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it had to be done. I think we're all in agreement with that. There had to be something. Because the whole Eve gameplay of Sinoing from place to place, I mean, I remember pre-Sino, or for the most part pre-Sino. It's just better. Like, fleets warping around, caps weren't super common, titans weren't super common. You had fleets going gate to gate, running into each other, running into camps. Just was a better experience. Yes, now you can teleport directly to your content, which is great, but that clumps the content together very much.
It's also worth noting that, like, LoSec is getting a significant buff with this change. Because with LoSec, you do have local, so you can know whether there's a recon alt cloak somewhere. And now if you see, like, it's just a random Praxis sitting on a gate, you know it's not a Sino Praxis for on a snuff alt. It's just a Praxis sitting on a gate.
Yep,
you can scout to see if it's got a recon. So I feel like out of any area of space, LoSec is getting the most benefit out of this change.
Yeah, with that's a really good point.
The major NullSec empires will probably find ways to adapt to it and still have relatively safe, like, crabbing. There will be ways for hunters to counteract their countermeasures, etc., etc. That's how it always goes. But I feel like LoSec is the real winner here. NullSec. LoSec. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's going to make gate camping in general a lot more fun. So you're going to be able to get more aggressive fits where you're diving in on targets and getting in scram range and slugging it out instead of having to worry about the thing always carrying a Sino.
Yeah, because certainly when I've seen enough small gangs itself, does it have a Sino enters into your equation far too often, and the fact that it's so common these days for carrier and titan blobs to literally teleport to you. Again, I'd love to see that LoSec gets a buff out of this, even indirectly, and I'm looking forward to them getting more of a buff.
Alright, let's report back after it goes live and share our exploits. But speaking of capitals, Snuff, who we've touched on this podcast previously, is having one of, if not the biggest capital blobs in LoSec. A almost unkillable capital blob. Got the shit beat out of him. Snuff Titans went Titan for Titan against another fleet. And the super capital losses were fairly even, but the real story here is Snuff's Fax Wing, the Force Auxiliaries, which are brought in to help keep the Titans alive. They lost them in just droves, man, against what looks to be mostly GOTG.
Yeah, so it was explicitly Snuff versus Dead Coalition or GOTG. The story that I was told is that Snuff has been poking them for a while now up in the north. And this time around, they had reinforced a Tartara and a Faction Fortizar. And this particular fight kicked off over the Faction Fortizar timer. Basically, Snuff showed up to the fight with their Legion fleet. They're using AB Beam Legions, which in, like, post T3 rebalance is pretty interesting.
It's not actually. It's at the Legion itself right now. It's probably the best armor cruiser level fleet in any kind of low sec and null sec because of the amount of EHP you can squeeze out of them. It's insane. They are almost unkillable.
I feel like a sizable Munin fleet will still kill them.
A big enough Munin fleet will kill anything. The advantage with Legions is that they got a bit of a buff when when medium beams got a 10% range boost recently. So basically, your Legions can now beam out to nearly 100 kilometers without any mods whatsoever. But you can also refit them to a ham refit, which gives them pretty nice DPS if you want to go in knife fight range of people. And most of their fits tend to be passive, which means that they're, you can try and nuke them out, but if they're ham fit, you won't do anything to them, and their tanks remain as solid as ever.
Just gotta go after the Logi at that point.
Yeah, that's where all the apostles came in.
Yeah, and that's where they all died, too.
In any case, the story goes, legions were dropped, and then, like, capital escalation happened, because that's what occurs when you drop Faxes to support your legions, and then Dreads are dropped on the Faxes, and then you counter-drop Dreads, then suddenly GOTG decides to drop Supers. And then Snuff decided to drop Supers. And the story goes that basically Snuff ran out of Faxes. Like, they had to mid-over Faxes from their staging system. Crap, was it Pinacasto? I want to say it was Pinacasto, but I can't quite recall. And they basically ran out of Fax. And when they realized they're going to run out of Fax, they had invited Initiative over, which, fun fact, Pando was FCing the Initiative Stuka fleet here. And he didn't know when he was getting invited that Snuff was planning on dropping their Titans. And nobody knew that freaking Deadco was going to be dropping their Titans. So, like, he was streaming live this whole fight from his point of view, and the VOD is up on Twitch if you want to go and, like, just check out Pando FCing the Stuka fleet in the middle of this massive Titan brawl. But his Stuka fleet was instrumental in clearing bubbles and helping the majority of the Snuff Titan fleet escape after they lost all their Faxes. That's the story.
You say, I'm looking for this video. I'm not finding it.
Hang on, I got you.
Linkage. So
just while you guys go looking for that, just as a, in case any of our listeners are fairly new to the game itself, and I just want a bit of a kind of untangle what this is all about. Obviously, you know, Titans are the biggest ships out there in the game, but the role of the of Force auxiliary ships in this particular setting is basically to act as a buffer between damage versus the Titan itself, because one Apostle can tank a Titan for insane amounts of DPS, tens of thousands of DPS to be exact, which means that as soon as Facs are on the grid, you have to clear the Facs before you can start to make any dent against the Supers, unless you have such a massive amount of friendly DPS versus their DPS that you can brute force for it. But it's unfeasible with Force auxiliaries these days. So that's why in these kind of engagements, you'll quite happily will trade dozens of Force auxiliaries if it means keeping kind of Titans off the kill board, which is indeed what Snuff did.
Let's dig into this a little bit more. So there's some details that are left out, and there's also some interesting context to this fight. So as far as we're aware, or at least as far as I'm aware, this is the first proper super cap brawl, not like a gank, but an actual, like, we have a Titan fleet, they have a Titan fleet, we're shooting each other, we both think we can win situation, since the Fax changes with diminishing returns. So that's important. It means that both sides, the number of Faxes they had were significantly less valuable than they would have been in previous fights. It's also worth noting that when Snuff first entered grid, a couple of their Titans bounced hard, and they bounced straight towards the GOTG fleet. So GOTG, like, they got a couple of free Titan kills, essentially, before they had to shred Faxes, because they bounced incorrectly. Furthermore, it's interesting to note that when these Titan brawls happen, at least in all the cases prior to the Fax changes, that may change now, we don't know, you could either shoot the Fax first, or if you had enough Titans, you could Doomsday Volley. So if you go back and listen to any of the coverage, watch the videos of, like, UALX or, what was the one up in Tributes?
X-47. That was pure blind.
It was all about Doomsday volleys. So using the Doomsday module on the Titan, enough of them will volley through another Titan. You can have that option as well. And so in this fight, the story that was told to me was that Snuff shot Titans first and Supers, whereas Deadco shot Fax first.
And shoot many Faxes they did, specifically over 130 billion worth.
I think it's very, I think it's a, very, very sensible to raise that point, Artemis, that this is actually what was, for, as far as we know, the first time that, as you say, a full-on Titan on Titan brawl has happened post-fact change. I think we can extrapolate, given the number of the apostles that died on the snuff side, and indeed the Minakawas on the darkness side, that had those faxes been there pre-change, they would have been far more effective. But certainly there was a butcher's bill on both sides.
Oh yeah, this thing was bloody for sure. It wasn't just the case that Snuff got totally smashed here.
We haven't yet described the numbers to the listeners. So for those who haven't seen the battle report on the Snuffed Out plus Initiative plus like Horde were there, etc., you had a total loss of 723 billion ISK, and they had 414 pilots, give or take. And then on the GOTG or Deadco side, they had 470 pilots, give or take, or 407, pardon me, and they lost 568 bill. It's also worth noting that Deadco / GOTG held the field, so they were able to loot the field.
That sweet, sweet ISK. All right, we have a fairly interesting story about sweet, sweet ISK coming up. But first, let's talk about the upcoming changes to bumping as CCP continues to make significant changes to the game. Lave.
Good. So a bit more quality of life changes coming in for us. First off, bumping. Now, as a quick description for people who may not be aware of it, bumping is driving your ship into another ship, causing it to go off course. Now, you might see this in various things, such as if you try to warp to an object behind a citadel and your ship gets caught on the citadel, and unless you manually pilot away from it, you will end up being stuck there for some amount of time. But it can also be used for various means, such as if for some bizarre reason you bump your capital horribly and it goes flying off at a rate of knots, or indeed in HiSec if your freighter pilot is bumped by some malicious people who just keep bumping you with Macarials. CCP intend now to change this so that after 3 minutes your ship will warp regardless of whatever is, unless obviously it's scrambled, but if it's just been bumped, after 3 minutes it will warp. So it's designed to try and alleviate that slight bottleneck.
Can you imagine if that's if you were scrambled too? The biggest fuck you.
Guess 2 minutes 57. Warp. Disabled. That's probably how they'll do it, to be fair. I wonder if CCP will instigate a way of resetting that countdown. So it may well be that if you wanted to grief someone, you would just have a noob ship come up, scramble them, go GCC, and then they have to spend another 3 minutes getting bumped.
That is the current theory as to how ganking is going to work post this change. I know we had Globby, who people may know from hyper dunking back when that was a thing. He's a notorious code ganker on Talking in Stations, and he was talking like basically his and the rest of Code's conclusion is that the multi-box gankers, the people who, like, they themselves pilot 10 to 20 catalysts or taluses or whatever, they're going to be fine because they do all of their own setup. They aren't, like, having dudes. They don't have to flash form a fleet, so to speak. The nullsec groups, so, like, Minilove, Pandemic Horde, Sig, any other groups that just do ganking for ISK, they will really struggle because you can't flash form a fleet to take care of a target anymore. Furthermore, like, there's a whole meta of queuing up targets if you're doing like a ganking fleet, like a standing fleet, so to speak, that's just broken by this change. You can't do it anymore. Similarly, like coordinating, constantly redoing scrams doesn't really work because if you're a criminal, your ship gets blown up by Concord no matter what. It doesn't matter if you don't instigate a new criminal act. If you board a new ship, that ship gets blown up by Concord. So you have to have multiple tunes to do this over and over and over again. So that makes it infinitely more difficult if you're trying to do multiple targets at the same time. So the general conclusions are, for ganking, the multi-box gankers, the really prolific guys, they won't be affected very much. The ransomers, so the people who bump in order to try and convince people to pay them money to let them get away, they are just completely gone. That is not a thing you can do anymore, unless the player is stupid and doesn't know this change is a thing. Which, granted, that's probably a good number of high-sec players, but moving on. The standing fleets slash nullsec sig slash we gank for isk type people where they flash form a bunch of dudes to gank is probably going away as well. Unless CCP like extends the time to 10 minutes or something like that, because it's really just not feasible to get people in. And then finally, is that ganking outside of like the Yuidama and the major pipes is probably going to go down significantly, because it's going to be very hard to move your entire gank fleet over to meet a target in time. Whereas previously you just bumped them, and while you moved your gank fleet, now you can't. Now you have to move your gank fleet in advance of that target arriving in your, whatever system you find ideal for the gank.
Also, in the quality of life update, a couple of little things, such as kind of tutorial updates, adding some characteristics to ships to tell new players what ships might benefit from either a shield or an armor tank. But an interesting one is a fix to friend or foe missiles, a lesser-known type of weapon system seen in EVE. Again, just to explain to anyone who's not fully familiar with these, friend or foe missiles don't require an active kind of, you know, going after a particular target lock F1. They genuine lock on to anything that's kind of targeting you and or whatnot, and go after them directly. Now, this was being abused a little bit in wormholes. Now, particularly these were black hole wormholes, which confer a missile velocity bonus, which allows basically means missile ships are really powerful in black holes. But what would happen basically is that you would have players warping into wormhole sleeper sites at a high range, you know, 400 to 500 kilometers with Ravens, with friend or foe cruise missiles, and then being able to basically obliterate the field with very little to no repercussion. That's being changed so that friend or foes will now have a maximum targeting range, which will now be correctly enforced. So that strategy is going away also.
Now, Leif, could you, for the audience who aren't familiar with FOF, can you highlight for them why FOF devastated the field, whereas conventional versions of those missiles would not?
Conventional weapons rely on an active target lock. Now, an active target lock can only be achieved within 300 kilometers. And sleeper drones are pretty good at zapping targets, allowing them for a higher range. But the FOF strategy allows people to exceed that range, and therefore sometimes be outside of the normal aggression range of sleepers, or to basically just kill them before they even become a threat.
Yeah, so basically you could fit your Raven or your Barghest or whatever for max DPS because the Wrath just couldn't shoot you at all. And you could also this whole time be completely aligned out and have a cloak in your spare high slot and be really hard to catch, and be making hundreds of millions of ISK per hour.
So wrong.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm happy this has been changed. I know there'll be some people out there who'll be less than happy about it, but come on, guys.
Adapt or die, as they say. Speaking of making ISK per hour, the July monthly economic report has been released, and the effects of the blackout could not be more stark, as laid out here. Oh my gods. So one such picture that they share, graph porn, for those of you who are into it, is the top 8 sinks and faucets over the past 2-ish years. Goes from August 2017 to, looks like August 2016. Oh yeah, excuse me, August 2016 to August 2019. So the past 3 years. And what you see is bounties, NPC bounties, well above, head and shoulders above the next highest faucet, and the sinks don't even remotely compare. It has a fairly steady rise over the course of those 3 years, some dips here and there, but it seemed to have reached peak score at January 2019 when it peaked 2.8 trillion. Getting quite close to that 3 trillion ISK bar. At which point, it does start to drop pretty steadily, which we could talk about why that might be the case. But then what you see what happens with the blackout, where it goes from about, let's say, 1.6-ish, just shy of 1.6 trillion, all the way down to what looks like under 0.5 trillion. Essentially overnight.
Yeah, so that peak that you see over there in January, February, coincides with most of the southern entities, such as Goons and Initiative, being home, basically crabbing before their offensive against the north, which then coincides with the spring period being kind of like on a downward trend, if you will. But as you quite rightly say, the monthly incomings there of about 1.5 trillion being chopped down to about 0.5, 0.6 trillion itself. It's a staggering decrease. And you look out on the graph and you can't miss it.
Now it has recovered slightly, it seems, going into August. Looks like 0.6. And the month is not done. So,
but even then, the lowest in the last 3 years, the lowest point that graph ever got to was 1.2 trillion. So it's only ever recovered to at the best 50% of the worst that it was in the last 3 years.
Yep. Now, what else has changed? You look at the graph, nothing has changed very sharply, but you are seeing an increase in incursion payout. This does appear to be a cyclical change, and doesn't appear to be terribly related to the bounty graph, but you can presume some people are moving away from bounties into incursions, some people moving away from that into missions, or perhaps that's just steady player growth. It's a very slight increase month to month, but it's steadily going up. Insurance payouts, not spiking as high as you would expect, considering what you would think is tons of destruction from the blackout. So that's either people losing higher value ships, people not choosing to insure those ships, or most likely, a lot of the bounty drop is voluntary. In other words, people are too afraid to do it, so they're not, as opposed to people being stopped by physical force.
I want to bring up here a post by a dude. Hang on, what's his name? It's a fantastic name. Angry Mustache. Some dude on r/Eve who did some good data analysis of the MER stuff. And he basically compared July to April, which was the month before, or was the last full month before the Imperium, like, undeployed from Delve, right? So Delve is a significant portion of mining and a significant portion of, like, bounty prizes in Eve. So you really, like, you need those numbers intact in order to do a proper comparison pre and post blackout. And the graph that I particularly want to highlight is one where he compared ratting by coalition between April and July. And he even went through the trouble of, like, tracking. So PanFam moved from, like, Geminate and Vale and Tribute over into drone regions. And he accounted for that when he made this graph, which I think was awesome. But basically, almost everywhere, you're cut by half, if not more. So the Imperium, they lost half their bounty prizes. Winter Coalition lost a little bit more than half. GOTG, they're down almost two-thirds of their bounty prizes. Legacy Coalition is down about 40%, PanFam almost exactly half, and Pravi almost exactly half. It is nuts. Just across the board, it averages out to about half of all bounty prizes for the main coalitions are gone.
And good riddance.
Well, yeah, I can't say it's missed.
Similarly, although interestingly, in mining, so we have seen a bit of a shift for income generation from ratting over to mining because of various things with it being safer because of umbrellas and stuff like that. In any case, we see the Imperium, they lose about like 10% or so of mining income. Legacy, on the other hand, they jump up by about 50%. Winter Coalition loses maybe 5%. GOTG loses half again. GOTG's income is way freaking down. PanFam, as a result of their move from the north over into drone lands, has doubled, if not tripled, in their mining amount from April to July. And Pravi, similarly, has doubled, if not tripled, in their mining amount from April to July.
Really? So,
invest in Rorquals, maybe?
But not, not activated.
You know, mining hasn't really gotten any safer. Especially compared to ratting.
Oh yeah, and mining with X-Caps is extremely dangerous now because you can't, like, see the bombers entering your local. There is some, like, some people are doing, instead of instead of using the rigs that bonus your drone mining yield, they'll use the rigs that bonus your drone HP. So that it takes, like, the max fit with the implants and everything, it'll take 13 bombs, so basically multiple bombing runs, to kill your X-Caps. So that is one option. There is some counterplay there. That still doesn't help you with Bouchers, but compared to trying to, like, super cap or carrier rat, especially once these Sino changes go through, mining is almost certainly going to be the way to go, in my personal opinion. We'll probably see mining go way up and ISK go, or bounty prices go way down. Which means if I were to put on my tinfoil, like, bad economist hat, I would say T1 ships getting cheaper, which I'm happy for, because the mineral prices, like, there's so many stockpiles of minerals, even more minerals will be hitting the market. Sure, bounty prices are going down, but we're still at a roughly even faucets fee sink, so there isn't deflation in the economy yet, which means that that increase in supply from minerals probably means you're still going to see decreasing prices in ships. Mm-hmm. That's my bad economist oversimplification tinfoil hattery.
I think it's pretty fair. I mean, to put it in perspective, as Adam has said, with regards to raw calls, excavators are very dangerous to use now because 3 or 4 bombers will kill excavators, and at 600 billion a kill plus a kill mil, they're dead easy to knock down these days. So most of them tend to be now going either with, as you say, EHP rigs or indeed mining drone 2s. The difference in mining is that an excavator Rockwell will pull in about 180 meters cubed per second. And a mining drone, a Tech 2 mining drone fit will do about 74. So roughly about 35-40%-ish. But you also have to offset that the Rockwell is also far cheaper because it's not full of excavators. And that probably makes it worthwhile. Because most people these days, most of the null block entities that used to do this will simply repurpose their Rockwell alts to do this so that they can continue their money making itself. It's not going to be batshit crazy to the same extent that it was with excavators, but it's still a method that is easily multitasked, is easily multiplied. And it's also very, very difficult, if not impossible, to defang a Rorqual out of mining drones.
Mm-hmm.
What were your M3? Was that M3 per second or M3 per minute?
M3 per second. So I'm looking at Pyfer right now with a full mining drone fit, Rorqual with a T2 industrial core. No implants, and it says for mining drone 2, 74.3 meters cubed per second, as opposed to about 180 for excavators.
Right on. I just wanted to quickly take a look at, so the Rorqual, it's had a bunch of nerfs to it, and it's also had a buff, which some people have been taking advantage of, some people haven't, and some people didn't even know it happened, which is that the bonus, the T2 siege gets to boosts, particularly like your mining boost, your mining foreman links, has been increased. So using like porpoises, or not porpoises, procurers and retrievers and things like that with your Rorquals is significantly better than it has ever been in the past. And I wanted to take a look and see how worth it is to use, just instead of a Rorqual alt, using T2 drones, using a retriever alt or something. But a retriever, even with the max boosts and, let me see, max skills, it's still only getting like 17 M3 per second. So granted, it's significantly cheaper than a Rorqual, but you're still probably worth it with the Rorqual over a retriever alt.
Yeah, it'll cost you about, for the full fit of the Rorqual itself, right, about 4 to 5 build, depending on how much you want to bling the thing. That's opposed to about 8 to 10 bill for an excavator fit one, because you have to offset the 3 bill plus of excavators That's assuming you carry only one flight and no spares.
Compare that to 25 mil for a good retriever fit.
It's all about the character.
Alright, we're talking too much about freaking crabbing.
Yeah, let's get into some politics. So, I put a poll out. 50-50 is the respondents. 50%. No clear winner here, but it would be interesting for us to talk about. So you're a coalition diplo. Say you're in the drone lands. A new coalition decides to move in. This is inspired, of course, by the pandemic horde relocation, or PanFam relocation broadly. What do you do if you're the pre-existing power there? Do you decide to blue that coalition, preserve your stability? Or do you try to push them back out because you need space and you need content?
If I can get the Imperium to deploy, kill them. If I can't get the Imperium to deploy and help me, blue them.
Run away!
Like, if you're just an alliance or coalition in the drone lands, and PanFam moves in, PanFam is still, like, top two, top three somewhere in their coalitions in this game. They'll just roll you. Blew them, definitely.
Lave, what about you?
I'm going to go along with the Artemis strategy here itself. Some of these entities are too big to get out of the way of.
Alternatively, move into their old space. Depending on the size of your coalition, so Dronelands is good because it has good true sec in some areas, and which means you get better ores and better anoms, but it also has very short jump ranges between areas. So basically, like, one staging system with all your super capitals covers like 200 and something systems in the umbrella. Compared to Delve, it's a significant difference. But if you're a relatively small coalition who's currently living in drone lands, just move into free contribute or whatever. You're going to have better space in terms of, like, your ratting income, if ratting is what you do, because ratting out in drone lands is significantly worse than it is everywhere else for a bunch of different reasons. So, like, there is a third option here, which is just go take the new vacant space, which, for the record, a bunch of small entities are actually doing.
Yep.
I don't know if I'd be quite so eager to blue everybody as you guys are. So for the devil's advocate position, especially in the drone lands, where you kind of have a pretty good guard against people coming in, if you allow this entity to come in, set up space, move all of their assets in unchallenged, especially if they are larger, more powerful than you, you might as well move out, because there's no way you're ever going to challenge them ever again. Whatever they want to do, they're going to do. Whatever they want you to do, you're going to wind up doing. You're basically going to become a pet in your own home. But if you stop that and try to hold them, prevent them from getting that beachhead, there is a chance you could fight back because you have the home advantage and because they can't really conveniently deploy their capitals. If that changes, you could always sue for peace later.
You make a good case. I'd still blue them, though.
Or just go into a wormhole and then don't blue anyone. And kill everyone.
Yeah, no blues ever anymore. Speaking of blues, I feel like I got some blues, personal blues. I got to meet the SoCal Eve community, and I know I touched on it, but I just want to give. I'm still thinking about it. It was such a fun meet. Gobbins, Lady Scarlet, Dunk Dinkle, the rest of the guys. It was so much fun! I really can't wait to see those guys again. The last Eve meet that I went to that wasn't like a fan fest type situation, it was small and frankly depressing. It's been a while since I've been to one that was vibrant like that, like how they kind of are back on the East Coast. So, cheers. I'm hooked. I'll see those guys again soon. Artemis?
if you were in the audience and thought Alec was about to say a sad story when he said that he felt like he had some real life blues, you're not alone. I'm sitting here staring at our show notes. I knew that host highlights were coming out next. And even still, when he said he had some personal real life blues, I thought we were about to get a sad story. In any case, my host highlight is logging in to defend my wormhole again, only to find out that the attackers, after they reinforced a pause and an Athnor and an Astra, decided to go crabbing, and then got ganked by HK, who just happened to get a connection, and then they gave up. So that was fun. Like, literally the attackers, they reinforced all the stuff, and they went crabbing in my wormhole, and then they got ganked by HK and never came back for the timers.
That's brilliant. My highlight was surprisingly less so. Of course, the eagle-eyed will know that I wasn't here last week. I wish I was. I was on holiday. But one of the great things about being on holiday is you can never really predict illness. And unfortunately, my little boy decides a few days before the holiday to develop chicken pox. So you can imagine a six-hour-plus drive of where I'm going on holiday with a little boy in the back suffering the worst stages of chicken pox and the viremia. It was not pleasant. We all had a good time anyway. But that was my highlight.
As far as shout-outs, I just want to thank everyone who joined us in the chat for the debut of Singing in Stations last Tuesday, my brand new show on the Talking in Stations network. That was so much fun. It was only an hour long. Rain was there for half of it. So it's just me singing, like, just heartbreaking renditions of some of your favorite songs. And we're going to try to get more Eve guests on that show going forward. Welcome anyone that would like to come and sing along or just hang out. Join us singing in Stations, 0300 Wednesdays.
My shout out actually goes to Rain for absolutely killing it in Singing in Stations. So I was asleep during Singing in Stations. It's just the nature of my work schedule. But I did see a Twitch clip of Rain just like really giving it her all on Singing in Stations. So shout out to her for that. That was pretty freaking cool.
My shout out is being away from Eve all along and completely missing the spectacle that was in Singing in Stations. Staying at Singing in Stations. Sorry, Alex, some free publicity to you, but I don't know what else to say.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks. It was a wonderful time. I had a lot of fun with it.
Can our show poll be who is a better singer, Alec or Rain?
Yes, it can be.
Excellent.
Oh, I'm putting it in right now, as a matter of fact. Or I would if I didn't just press the print button. Still getting used to my new keyboard. Overall, I think I like it, but it is definitely unusual. It's like ergonomic.
That's exactly what I was about to ask.
Yeah, it's ergonomic and also has a split space bar. So there actually isn't a space bar. There's two space buttons. In between those space buttons are control and shift. And then as the ergonomic keys are kind of angled upward, inside the V, there is a central enter button and a central backspace button.
What?
Yes. The shifts are just, they're the same size as a normal key, instead of having one be the size of the enter button. And the backspace button is larger and moved to the right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. But it looks cool, it feels cool. It's great to play League of Legends on, because all the keys you need are pretty easy to get to. It's just getting to the typing. That's the more difficult part.
But getting back to Eve, where are your function keys?
They are where they need to be. Exactly where they should be. I know my F1 by heart. That's right where I want it. I'm more of an F9er myself. That's my drone hockey.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I have F9 drones engage and F10 drones go back to bay.
Do you, like, move your mouse hand?
No.
So you move your WASD hand all the way across your keyboard over to F9 and F10?
Yep.
Wow.
If I don't plan on right-clicking or anything like that, yeah.
See, I use a freaking Logitech, what is it, a G11 or something like that? It's like, it's got 26 keys all as a separate thingy. And then it's also got like a couple of buttons that I use for locking targets and stuff. And so literally I have a key for every single module on my ship, plus lock targets, engage drones, overheat stuff, all that jazz. Highly recommend it.
Well, I'll try it out. I have a mouse with a couple extra buttons, but I just never really got used to using them. I don't know, creature of habit, man.
You definitely need to, like, get a picture of this thing and throw it in the show notes, and also send it to me somewhere on Discord so I can look at it.
Okay. I will do this. All right, that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com. Participate in the show poll, which will be who was the better singer from the debut episode of Singing Stations, myself or Rain Chocolate? Capitalist Army is recruiting. Could use a few good capitalists. Great time to join. Going to be doing something very special coming up in the next week or so. If you're a PvPer specifically, this is the time for you. Join Capitalist Chat in-game for more info, and you'll get more information on what is happening with us, with that secret project I told everyone about, in the next episode. Wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.